Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition here of In the Zone. I'm Giancarlo Olino, joined here as always, Chris Martelli. This is episode 197. We're going to go through a jam-packed episode here, a lot going on. First, kind of touch on some NHL matchups that are pretty appealing here. Got Carolina and Buffalo was one that jumped out. Chris, tell us who you like here and who are some of the players you're going to be watching out for.
For sure. I think first I want to look at the money line, and you look at in regulation. I got it at minus 120. I was saying to you before the pod went live, you're probably not going to get Carolina this low in terms of money, especially at home against the Sabres. Sabres have been great, man. They're 7-3 to start the year. Tage Thompson looks like that player that they extended, and they're looking like, for the first time, I'll say, since maybe 2010, this is kind of an exciting time to be a Sabre fan. But, man, make no mistake about it, like Carolina, they're going to be motivated. They're coming off a tough loss last night to Tampa Bay. A lot of people are probably on Buffalo because they think they're tired, but I don't see them losing at home. I believe they've won like 8 of the last 10 at home against the Sabres. I'm going to take Carolina, man, here all day. I took them in regulation, too. So a player prop that I do like for this game, I like Seth Jarvis to get a point, and I also like Rasmus Dahlin under his assist total, which I think is at like minus 120, which is pretty good odds.
They got one here that they boosted up. Tage Thompson, the score. He's had a really good year. And Rasmus Dahlin also in that same one to get three shots on goal. Are you confident with that, or would you pass up on it?
I mean, every time, you know, a player's red hot like Tage Thompson, you kind of want to take it. But at the same time, everybody hits a wall eventually. And we talk so much the last couple of years, Alino, about how great Carolina's decor is. And you have Pesci and Slavin, and now you even add Brent Burns. I think if this is the game where Tage Thompson does not get on the score sheet, I think it's this game. And I think FanDuel understands that, yeah, you know, yeah, it's a nice boost, 550. But I like Dahlin shots for sure. But in terms of Thompson scoring, you would think he would, but I don't think it happens.
And speaking of FanDuel just preying on people, look at the line here. Columbus, a heavy underdog, plus 205. And we got Arizona plus 220 against Washington. I don't know. Like, I'm kind of liking Columbus's chances more than Arizona, obviously. But do you see any of these underdogs coming out on top?
Hey, if there's one thing we learned last night, anybody could win any night. And we saw today, earlier in the game, it was in Finland. I think they play in Finland tomorrow as well, Colorado and Columbus. Today was 6-3 for Colorado. I think Columbus is going to be hungry. Line A goal prop is looking nice. I mean, he's in his hometown. He scored today. I like that for him. But you know what? I like the +1.5 at only minus 110 for Columbus. I think that play is really good. And in terms of Arizona, man, I'm staying the hell away from them. They are absolutely terrible. I mean, like, I love their whole fan base. You know, it's a smaller venue, so they're a lot closer. But going up against Washington at home, I don't like it. Maybe if I had to take a play there, maybe under 6.5. But I don't know. That game just scares the shit out of me. Stay away from that.
What do you think of Arizona's new arena, the Mullet Arena there, 5,000 people? They actually sold out seats, which is nice, but do you think they can actually maintain 5,000, or is that a number that unfortunately Arizona is not going to see for the rest of the year?
I think it depends on the university, because I think I read somewhere where like 20% of the seats belong to university students, or they want them to be university students to make that, you know, get that chemistry and just get that tight bond in that arena. If the university students stop going, they're not going to hit 5,000 straight up. So, I mean, I love the fan base. I love the players on Arizona, too. There are a couple guys that, like Dylan Gunther's a guy who I think could be a really good hockey player. Clayton Keller we've seen be great. Barrett Hayden, he's got to do a little more. But Arizona deserves better. I think they should sell out. They're an NHL team at the end of the day. But with the circumstances and not reaching that stadium agreement till what? What is it, 2024, 2025? It's going to be a tough couple of years to be an Arizona fan, that's for sure.
And speaking of, I guess, the last few, we'll look at the Canadian teams. Stuart Skinner looks like he's the guy there. And Scott Wedgwood is slowly creeping up there. Like Ottinger, I know he's had some injury trouble, but he's got to watch his spot there because Wedgwood's getting a little too comfortable in the net. What do you like here with Edmonton and Dallas?
Let me tell you something right now. Scotty Wedgwood is a New Jersey Devil legend, okay? That guy was one of the greatest backups. He was backing up, I think it was at the time. Oh, it was so long ago. I'm trying to remember who the goalie was. I think it was like Blackwood as a – no, it was Corey Schneider he was backing up. And he would like he would come in, and some games he would have an 840 save, others a 930. So it's good to see guys like Stuart Skinner and Wedgwood, two very – I mean, Skinner's, what, 22? He's a young guy. He was a first or second round pick. But Wedgwood, this is a great story. Ottinger, I still think, is a top 15 goalie in the league. But what Wedgwood's been doing is absolutely incredible. But with this game specifically, man, I have to go with over 7 goals at plus 116. The Edmonton Oilers are averaging like 3.7 goals a game. I think Dallas's young players are starting to kind of wake up, like Robertson, Rupe Hintz. Just Dallas is a very underrated offensive team, man. You see Tyler Seguin's kind of bounced back. Joe Pavelski is still sipping that fine wine because he's still producing. So I love, again, a lot of people talk about the story in this game of the goaltending with Skinner and Wedgwood. I think this might backfire, man. I like the over 7 here at plus money with Edmonton.
I like it, and it wouldn't be fitting here. We got to talk about the Leafs in Boston because this one is a rivalry that's been one-sided, unfortunately. But Toronto, they got to get shit going here with their coach on the hot seat and their team just kind of always being in the media for something that's like criticized on. There's always something out of there, any game, but... What do you think this is going to be for the Leafs? Is it going to be a positive game or is this going to be a negative one where we're looking at, okay, Sheldon Keefe is getting closer to having that pink slip mailed into him?
Now, there's two ways to you know, bet on this game. Like, if you're a delusional Leaf fan, you take the Leafs to win at minus 128. But I'm going to keep it smart here, and I'm just going to go with the total. I'm going to go with over 6.5 at minus 134. Yeah. It's a little bit juiced up. Chris, why don't you take the money line? It's a little cheaper. I don't have faith in the Leafs right now beating the Bruins, who are, what, 10-1 on the year. Pasternak looks like a MVP type of player right now. By the way, I don't know if you guys noticed, but David Krejci's back on the team, so that kind of sucks. So I'm just going to take the over 6.5 goals here, man. I think that's the safe play. I already know there's going to be some Leaf fans out there that take them on the puck line to win. I'm not doing that. I'm just going to stick with the over 6.5 as I don't really have faith in either goalie either, to be honest with you. Samsonov has been good, but to me, he hasn't been consistent enough. And then on the other side, you have Linus Ullmark, who's 8-0. How long is that going to last? So I like the over in this spot. I don't necessarily want to take a winner here.
And on this topic of the NHL, we have to bring this up. Phil the Thrill, did our last pod, was getting close to that number. He gets to it, he sets it. Kind of pissed me off when they played the Leafs. He was at 989 when he tied it, and it was going to look like he was going for his 400th goal. It went in, Leafs go and challenge it, and that fucking smug look on their face is like, what a way to just rob him of his enthusiasm for old time's sake. But Kessel ends up getting his 400th goal in the next game for his 990th, and he's going to get some revenge, I guess, when he plays the Leafs for, I think it's 996. Do you think they'll finally show the video package for the guy?
They better, man. This guy's a Hall of Famer. I saw TSN, ESPN, Fox, all the new U.S. media outlets that are starting to actually, you know, promote hockey. They actually put out, you know, Phil Kessel, is he a Hall of Famer? Question mark. And, of course, you go in the comments and everybody loves Phil. How can you hate Phil Kessel? The guy's an absolute – he's such a unique individual. No one – like, no one – you're not going to see another Lucic. You're not going to see another Kessel in the league. That's just, these guys are just different. So the fact that he hasn't gotten a Vin yet, we said in our video, what, 3 years ago when we did our top 10 Leafs of the decade, that this guy is one of the greatest Leafs since the Sundin era. And that was 20 years ago. So the fact that he has not gotten a video package is absurd, man. This guy, what, 6 years in a row leading our team in points? And you're not even going to mention his accolades. What, you're going to, the fans are going to obviously cheer for him, but there's no video package for it. It's absolutely ridiculous. And while we're on the topic of Vegas, just keep betting them at this point because they look like an absolute wagon. Eichel looks like his old self. Phil on the third line. I mean, this team is for real. And dude, you already know me. I absolutely love Mark Stone.
Oh, man. And like, even speaking of Kessel, I think it's going to be crazy where he, hopefully, knock on wood, gets 1,000. He's close to it. 1,000 straight games. Like, I don't see any player matching that. Like, all the pressure, some of these young players coming into the league that they have to be aggressive. I think it ends up getting to their head, and we see them get a knock here and there. Kessel has been consistent in the way he plays. It works. He's been criticized a lot for the way he looks, but if that's going to make you play 1,000 straight games, I think everybody would sign up for that. At least he can retire after and not worry about being on pain medicine just to go up the stairs. So Phil the Thrill is doing something right over there.
I don't know how he played 1,000 straight. Well, not, was he at 993 now? I don't know how he did it. Just look at his physique, and you think he has to load manage like Kawhi, but this guy is just out there every single game. You got to love Phil Kessel, man. I just have nothing but love for the guy, even though he's a little weird. But I absolutely love him for that. The hot dogs, all the narratives that we've seen in his career. He absolutely deserves a Hall of Fame spot. And if the Leafs don't give him a video package, that's just straight up insulting, because what the hell have the Leafs done? Phil has more. He's won way more in the last 20 years than the Leafs have sniffed. So Leafs got to get on that.
I agree there. And we'll go on here to the NBA. Going to pull some of these up real quick. But they had one thing, like they had a boost I saw before that was telling you about LeBron James and Devin Booker both getting 30. I was saying that I wasn't too confident about this. Like, what are you expecting out of them? And do you even see it being a possibility with the way that both teams are playing right now?
I think KD could get 30 with Ben Simmons and Kyrie Irving out tonight. I think, though, that could also be a flat-out no, because you look at teams like Washington, who they're facing tonight. They have Kuzma. They have Porzingis. They have a lot of height. And I think if you're going to double-team, triple-team KD, you're going to swarm him. He's probably not going to get the points. If there was a bet for his player prop tonight, I'd probably bet over assists. I think it's at 7.5. I think he's going to pass the ball tonight. They're going to force him to facilitate. In terms of Devin Booker, though, he's facing Portland. This is a team that allows a lot of points. But again, if there's one thing I've been taught, Alino, with betting in NBA, if there's a blowout, the starters are not playing in the fourth quarter and they're not going to get that point total. So the spread's -12.5 for Phoenix. I would stay away from that.
And you even see the number here. Like, I just scrolled down. I remember looking at it. It was crazy, and it is. The money line. Phoenix is at -700. Portland's at +500. Like, if you're Portland, you did the trades. They clearly haven't worked out. Like, what do you do here with Dame Lillard?
It's tough, man. Like, the West is a very balanced. It's in a very good place right now. Like, Minnesota's improved. Dallas has improved, obviously the Pelicans, but it's not really I wouldn't really panic just yet. Simons is good. Jerami Grant's really good. I just think they need to find that chemistry, and obviously Damian Lillard's out another week with that injury, but I think, Alino, call me crazy, I think they could make the playoffs. If teams like the Clippers start to kind of, you know, slack off, and teams like, you know, let's say Denver or the Lakers, you know, teams that are like borderline, like even there's a lot of teams, like, let's say, I don't know, is, I'm trying to think of a team here. Like, who's in the West that's like in the middle there? Like, you have
the Lakers.
maybe the Lakers, maybe, you know, like Utah's not there, definitely not there. Regardless, like, let's say, like, I see the Trailblazers as like a, they're definitely a play-in team, I think. So if Dame is healthy, why can't they make the playoffs? It could be a similar narrative from the bubble when they were the eighth seed and they almost knocked off the Lakers. So I wouldn't knock this Trailblazer team off yet. I honestly do, call me crazy, without Damian Lillard, I could see them covering tonight at plus 12 and a half. Like, that's a lot of points. And, you know, yeah, Devin Booker's been on fire with points, but who else really has been? Like, DeAndre Ayton posts pretty bad lines at times. Bridges is not consistent enough offensively. And Chris Paul, you know how much I love him. The guy's not getting over 15 points in a game anymore. So, honestly, man, I think the best bet for that game is the Trailblazers plus 12 and a half, honestly. Like, anytime I see a spread that's over 10, like, I always take the underdog, always. Because, like I said, fourth quarter comes, it's a blowout. They put the bench guys on. You know, anything's possible at that point.
Nah, just going on. Like, I like the Raptors one, but there's just, it's a little too risky for my liking here because Doncic is going to show out here. I don't know why every time like a big superstar like that plays the Raptors, they pad the stats like crazy. Do you see the Raptors winning or do you see Luka Doncic just taking over and being unstoppable?
I think just the way that the Raptors have been playing, I got to take them on the money line at plus 134. That's great value. Siakam has arguably been a top 10 player in the league. Scotty Barnes, dude, the thing with us with that a lot of bettors like don't understand, I guess, in the States, because they're all delusional. They don't watch, like, they don't watch the Raptors enough. We're a long team. So Luka Doncic, call me crazy, can get 30 points tonight. But if we're going to be covering the paint, like, let's, like, dude, we got Koloko, Barnes, OG, Siakam all in the starting lineup. That's going to be terrifying for anybody going up in the paint. We know that the Mavericks are one of the slowest paced teams in the league. I don't see if the only reason I could see Dallas winning this game, Alino, is if Christian Wood goes off. And I don't know if he can with our defensive prowess. Yeah, you know, I think we're only underdogs, honestly, because Van Fleet's not playing. But even we've seen without Fred Van Fleet, guys like Trent step up, guys like Barnes step up facilitating. I like the Raptors here, man, at plus 134 on the road.
Yeah, Scotty Barnes then slots in the point guard. So I think it's nice that, obviously not nice that Fred VanVleet's injured, but it's nice that they have guys like Scotty Barnes that can play so many different positions. He can go in there at point guard and he becomes more of a threat if he's carrying the ball than with his back against a basket. So, like, I'm with you there. I think it could be one of those nights for them just defensively that when they're on. And another one here, New Orleans. I was surprised when I saw this. They're heavily favored over Golden State. Like, what do you think is going on in Golden State right now? And, like, is this that much of a mismatch?
Yeah, I'm not buying it. Honestly, I think this is a trap situation where they just want everybody to take the minus 11 for the Pelicans, and they want everybody to believe that Pelicans are a top four team in the West. I'm not there yet, man, honestly. Zion, he's looked fantastic. But when you look at a team like Golden State at plus 400, that to me just is a treat on a Friday night. Like, we already had trick-or-treating earlier on in the week, and now we get this treat, 400 for Golden State? Dude, they just won the championship. Like, it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm going to take Golden State here. I think last night's loss to Orlando is going to awaken something in this lineup. You still have a top five coach in Steve Kerr. I said to you before the pod, he has a lot of homework to do with this team, but make no mistake about it, man. When you have Jordan Poole, Curry, and Thompson, if those shots are sinking, the Pelicans could be down by 15 in the first quarter. So I really like Golden State at plus 11 is definitely something that I like, but I'm going to sprinkle them at plus 400 to win this game, man.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm like, when they saw them, like, they did win the championship, and it's not like their whole team just left in free agency. They literally have the exact same team. So, like, is Zion going to just bully everyone? Like, I know JV's going to probably get a lot of rebounds. He's going to get a lot of points there because centers and Golden State, it's a rough thing for them because Draymond Green's going to get early fouls on JV likely. He's going to sit out, and you're going to put a lot of pressure on the younger guys. But I still think Golden State, like depth-wise, shot selection, I think they should get that win. But I think they're being a little disrespectful after one loss. But another one we got to see here. Unfortunately, Kawhi's not going to be in this one. He's nursing an injury against his old team. Probably don't want to go make the trip to Texas, but we got the Clippers and Spurs. Like, are you impressed with what you've seen out of the Spurs this year out of Jakob Poeltl?
Oh, yeah. To me, I mean, okay, other than that blunder of a game against the Raptors where they lost by 40, the Spurs haven't looked too bad. Keldon Johnson's averaging over 20. I really like the way that rookie they just drafted is looking. I love Jakob Poeltl. He is looking like an absolute monster in terms of rebounding, getting the ball. I like Poeltl's point prop tonight. I think it's at like 14.5. And I also like Paul George to go over his points. Call me crazy. I think that's at 25.5. But the Spurs lack defense. We all know that they're tanking for Wembanyama. I think they're going to probably get him. To me, they're the worst team in the league, the Spurs, when you look at depth, when you look at promise. The Clippers, I love Reggie Jackson. I love John Wall. I love all these guys here. But Paul George, any given night, Alino, when he faces a bottom five team and you look at his usage rate, he could get 30 points with ease. So I like Paul George and I like Pearl's point props tonight, but I really am circling the Clippers at -3.5 tonight.
Yeah, I'm looking there down here. Like, I saw Paul George was at like 25. I think he can get that, especially with Kawhi. Like, they're going to rely on Paul George so much. And we've seen it too in all the games he's been playing. Like, Norm Powell, he gets a lot of points off the bench. I think they should really use him more just to build his confidence. And Jakob Poeltl is just something here, like with the Spurs, that I don't know what they're going to do going forward. Like, even if they try to tank, like, do you think it would be enough if guys like Jakob Poeltl are putting them in a position to win games?
I think at that point they would have to trade him, because we all know the narrative with the Spurs, man. Honestly, I was watching the game the other night. Their attendance is probably at the probably the lowest it's ever been. I think they just want to bring that excitement back to the team. And as great as Poeltl and Keldon Johnson have been, they don't bring that excitement, unfortunately, at least not for now. So I think if Poeltl's averaging like 15 and 10 by the trade deadline, he might be a really big trade candidate for a contender. That's just how the Spurs are rolling right now. I'll even say the same thing with Charlotte. I think Charlotte by maybe like January, we're probably going to see PJ Washington on the move. We might see Gordon Hayward on the move. It's unfortunate because, again, LaMelo Ball, he's on the team. He's a top 25 talented player. But the situation that happened in the offseason with Bridges and all the other stuff, it's kind of, and how great the East has become, you know, Cleveland is absolutely phenomenal. The Hawks are looking good. The Raptors are looking good. The East is incredible. So I think teams like the Spurs and the Hornets, regardless, Alino, if players are doing well or not, I think they're more likely to get traded than to stay with the team, even through a rebuild.
Yeah, I agree there. And speaking of staying and being a part of something big here, we got to stay on this topic of the NBA just for one more here, because Russell Westbrook is still with the Lakers, and he comes off the bench sometimes. He helps them win games. He was crucial in that one win they had. And I don't know, he still gets a lot of criticism when they lose. Like, what do you, if you're like their GM, like, why aren't you trading him? Like, why are you just keeping the guy hostage in LA?
I think another big reason, Alino, is I saw after they started 0-5, a lot of people, analysts, coaches, management, were all saying, is Russ going to retire next year? What is going on? So when a statement is, you know, exposed like that and put out in the media, does anybody really want Russell Westbrook? So I love Russ. The guy to me is a Hall of Famer. People are going to say, Chris, you're stupid for saying that. How? He had one of the most dominating MVP seasons I can remember, but it's a shame to see. I mean, he's been balling off the bench. Is he really a bench player, though? I don't think he is in this league. yeah, his shot selection's terrible and his field goal percentage isn't good, but he has to share the ball with LeBron and AD, and he's never been able to share the ball. So I think he has to go to a team like Utah, like San Antonio, that's at the bottom of the barrel, and just do his thing, because that's all Russ knows how to do, man. And it sucks, but I don't know. I don't really see any team really going out there knocking on the Lakers' door and saying, hey, I want Russell Westbrook. But if he were to get traded, it's probably more beneficial for his career, honestly.
I agree there. Like, I think he has to. Like, this is a, like, he's a scapegoat ridiculous there, but it's too much now. Like, the guy, like, even when he's not playing, it's Russell Westbrook's fault. Like, how did he, like, cause a loss from the bench? But we're going to move on now to our final topic here, Crown Jewel. So WWE once again having this afternoon pay-per-view or premium live event, they're calling it. It's in Saudi Arabia, so you know a lot of wacky stuff's going to go on with just all the amount of money they pay. And one of the big matches they're going to kick this off with is Braun Strowman and Omos. This is a clash of monsters here. What are your thoughts on this match?
I love how they did the weigh-in. That was hilarious. Like, it's a UFC event. I, you know what? I'm really happy for Omos getting a spot like this, because I never thought he would ever in his career. This is a big deal for him. And this is, I think, a make or break performance. If Vince McMahon was still in charge, he'd be loving this. I think this is more of a for the world heavyweight title, but I love the way Braun Strowman looks. I think, again, we've talked about it before, Alino, like, is Strowman going to join The Fiend at some point, or Bray Wyatt? Like, we have no idea, but I think Strowman needs to win this. Coming back, hasn't had a lot of I think this might be his first pay-per-view match, actually, since coming back. I think he needs the win here. Both of them do, but I think Braun is the guy that needs it more than Omos.
Yeah, and then also they have that angle there. So do you think it could be, like, beneficial for them if they keep this for more than 1 month?
For Omos, for sure. But for Braun, I feel like it's holding him back. We've seen what he's been able to do with Chad Gable and what the hell's his name? I forgot. Otis. So it's just one of those things where, you know, you look at Braun Strowman, he won the Universal title from Goldberg at WrestleMania. A lot of people forget that. He was in a main event spot, almost as a guy that was in a tag team. He was being carried by AJ Styles because we didn't know what his actual in-ring work was like. This is going to be a big step for Omos. We're going to see if he could actually go with a guy like Strowman, who's been in the business for, what, 6 years now with WWE. I think, again, like I said, if it goes on for a month, it's going to benefit almost more, but it's going to hold Strowman back a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I just want to see, like, what they do, because Bray Wyatt is going to be on the show. They advertise them, and like you mentioned there, like, it's probably going to benefit almost if he can get a win here, continue to make him look good. But also with Braun Strowman, I want to see some interaction there with Bray, that maybe we see something down the line there with them. But next match here, another one. I think this rivalry's gone on a little too long with Drew and Karrion Kross, and now they're having a steel cage match. Like, do you think this is a feud that needs to end, or do you think this is going to be, unfortunately, the first of many more matches to come?
I think it's a win-lose situation here. If you continue the feud, it's a win for Karrion Kross, as, you know, you're trying to prove that he could be a sub-main event type of guy and a big box office draw with Drew. But for Drew, this is a flat-out loss if they continue this feud. This is a guy that probably should have won the WWE title in the UK there. It's just one of those things where Drew McIntyre, I have no idea where he's going after this feud. Is he going to go for the IC title against Gunther? Like, is that one of the better options? Maybe go again in another feud with Sheamus, have Drew turn heel, because Sheamus is over as a face right now. To me, Drew has to win this match. I don't see Karrion Kross, because Karrion Kross won the strap match because of Scarlett putting pepper spray in his eye. I just think Drew McIntyre is winning this match. And I'm not going to, maybe not in dominant fashion, and maybe they're going to make Karrion Kross look strong, but Drew needs the win here.
Yeah, He desperately needs something, unless they're going to turn him heel, but like he needs something here. Hopefully they change his booking around, but something that is happening here. This match was recently announced. They had it on Raw and they figured, why not? What the hell? Why not just have it again at the pay-per-view? Because we didn't see this the last 5,000 times. Asuka and Alexa Bliss defending their newly won titles against Damage Control. I don't have any high hopes for this, but maybe they surprise here. Who do you got in this one?
I got Asuka and Alexa Bliss retaining, because if they don't retain, that might be the dumbest title change I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I really like Io here. I think this might be, she knows how big it is to actually get invited to Saudi Arabia and be a part of the card. Asuka and Io Shirai, I want to see a lot of them too go at it. Alexa Bliss to me has been, I hate to say it, a little bit under, just been a little bit disappointing for me the last couple of years. So maybe this motivates her to step up her game with Asuka as the tag champs, but I'm not really sure. I still think that this one's going to be not too long on the card, and I think the faces have to win here. But I'm curious to see how they book Io and Dakota as a tag team moving forward, because they shouldn't have lost the titles on Raw.
Can you imagine if they only lost just because they want to have a title change, and this is the only match that they want to put a title change for? So they threw it on here. I'm like, it's all good. Let's just give them the titles and we'll play hot potato with it.
If they do, they really don't want Asuka to be a star. Like they really, like they just gave up on her because she, like, I get it. Ronda Rousey's a big box office, but Asuka should be doing what Ronda's doing. She should be at the top of her game, the SmackDown Women's Champion, going at it as much as possible. But nope. You know, you have Charlotte, you have Becky, you have Ronda, you have now, I guess, Liv Morgan. I just think Asuka has to reach that level at some point. And if she loses here again, I'm afraid we might never see her at that level.
Oh, man. Let's hope they do something with her. Just don't throw it out like that. But we got the Undisputed tag titles now. The Brawling Brutes looks like without Sheamus taking on the Usos. And I don't know, this tag title run, I don't see the Brawling Brutes being that team to take it off them. But like, do you think with Sheamus' popularity, they would go in that direction?
Yeah, I was just going to say, if the Brawling Brutes win the tag team titles, Sheamus might be in line sooner rather than later to win the Intercontinental title. I don't think he's going to reach that, because I said to you, I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, like Sheamus could be as big as Daniel Bryan's face run at this stage right now. He is over as over. So if the Brawling Brutes do end up ending the Usos' reign, which to me, by the way, very underwhelming. They're the undisputed tag team champions. And to me, they haven't done a tremendous job. I think that maybe I'm just tired of them being champions. I'm not really sure. They're one of the greatest tag teams in this generation, no doubt about it. But it would be fresh, it would be different, and it would definitely benefit the Brawling Brutes, and it would definitely benefit Sheamus, and it would intrigue everybody to see what the next step is for Sheamus' face run. But Alino, I got to go with the Usos retaining here.
I agree. I like this whole Sami Zayn thing, though, with every week he's making them break character in the ring, and he's not even trying to hide it anymore. He's telling Jey Uso, like in the backstage one, oh, we're gonna go to Waffle House, and he just like loses it. Solo Sikoa is trying not to look in the camera and look at him at this point. So I like what they're doing there. It's Usy there, and he's calling them my dog and all that. But next match they have here is a Raw Women's title, Bianca Belair versus Bayley. This might sound crazy, but I think we're going to see a title change. I got Bayley winning the title.
Oh, shit. I like that a lot. I'm going to go with Bianca to retain one last time. I don't see her losing the last woman standing. And if she does lose, to me, I'll be a little bit shocked. But again, here's the thing, Alino. Let's say you have Damage Control come out, you know, attack Bianca, as they probably will. Do you have Asuka and Alexa Bliss come out and just make this a clusterfuck and a six women type of thing? Or would you actually have Bianca take out all of Damage Control and then Asuka comes out or one of them and they turn on Bianca? Because, or maybe we see Sasha Banks come back. I don't know. I'm very optimistic with that. But I would be open to a Bayley title, like Bayley winning the title for sure. She's hinted at it before. I just think Bianca, man, that's her. That's their star right now. That's their new man. That's their new Becky Lynch. I think Bianca Belair retains here.
Yeah, that'd be interesting if they did that. The nice swerve at the end there, unless Damage Control attack Asuka and Alexa Bliss after their match, so they can't come out, and maybe that starts some infighting. Maybe Alexa Bliss turns heel eventually, but I'd like to see just a new feud. I think this whole Damage Control and Bianca Belair storyline, I know it started, I think, at SummerSlam, and it feels like it's been going on for like 8 months, but it's been like two. So just, I think they got to end it at this point. And
I think also, I just think another thing too, Alino, now that Rhea Ripley is clear to compete again, I think they're actually trying to make her the women's champion at some point. She is looking incredible with Judgment Day. I think you keep the title on Bianca Belair just to put Rhea Ripley over as the top heel in the company and be the women's champion with the hottest heel act in Judgment Day, other than obviously the Bloodline. But the Bloodline, they're going over as faces right now. They're getting cheered. They're oozy. They're feeling it. But I want to see Bianca Rhea, man. That's why I think Bianca, I don't know, that's just me. I really want to see Bianca retain just to see Bianca and Rhea go at it.
Yeah, that would be a good match if they bring that NXT thing to it. But
oh, here's your match.
This is the main event, I think. Brock, Bobby Lashley. Imagine like just hearing them backstage when they heard the news that Logan Paul is main eventing over Brock Lesnar. I think he asked for
a release.
Yeah, he's probably like, you know what, Triple H, sure, they're going to main event over me. I'm still getting 30% of whatever the fucking arena and gate is paying. So Brock, it took a lot to bring him here. He's going again. He's not missing this payday. Do you think he gets a win back, or do you think there's going to be something where Bobby gets a win and Brock turns more of a heel after the match?
I think Brock's winning this, but I do think this is not the end. I think there's another match in the cards, maybe Survivor Series, maybe WrestleMania, because we know Brock can push a feud back because of his limited schedule. I do want to see Lashley win this, but I don't think it's the end. If it was the end, I would say Lashley wins. But yeah, you said a good point. I was watching some of the, you know, altercations, and it looks like Lesnar is the heel here, but he's not really a heel. No one boos the guy. So to me, it's still a badass versus a badass. They're both not necessarily faces. I guess Bobby is more of the face, but I think Brock Lesnar, man, comes in here and he gets a win over Bobby.
Yeah, I think he gets that win back from Royal Rumble. And I think they're going to push this along even longer. Like, I know with Survivor Series coming up, they could just do the rematch, but I think it would be interesting if they're on the same team in that War Games match that they do, that they announce. So if you have Brock and Bobby on the same team and whoever the heel faction is, maybe they take on Gunther and Imperium. I think that would be interesting. But I think this is going to go on to WrestleMania. Maybe one of them eliminate each other in the Royal Rumble, because I think they'll both be in that match too. And that's how you can push it on. But good for Bobby Lashley, finally getting this big spotlight on him. And it's good for both guys at this stage of their career that they're finally having that match.
Yeah, I'm very happy for Bobby. He was a top five wrestler of the year on the PW in their magazine. So yeah, very, very great year for Bobby Lashley. Very happy for him, man. Because back in the day, he was as stiff as a board. So now the fact that he's, you know, he's doing tremendous work. This is the same elevation that I saw from Cena in 2015 when he was doing the open challenges. And I'm just looking at, I'm like, this is not the same Cena from his whole run. This is a completely different guy's doing the flip bombs, and he's doing all these, like the Hurricane Rana. Like, what the hell is Cena doing? Same thing here with Lashley. A lot of different moves that I've never seen from him before. I absolutely love Lashley. He deserves this spot, but we got to give it to the guy that always redeems himself after a loss, and that's Brock Lesnar.
That's it. Brock going to take that win back to Saskatchewan on the farm and count that money at a boy. But here's the main event.
Oh.
Got Roman Reigns defending the title against Logan Paul. Like, I know Logan Paul is going to probably have his moments during the match. They're going to make it look like he's going to win. The crowd there when they had this press conference didn't look like they were even cheering him. So Roman's going to be cheered. They're going to make Logan Paul be more of a babyface throughout the match. But I think there's it's just for Roman to win. Like, I don't see Logan Paul any way possible that he gets a title.
This is a nightmare situation for WWE, because if it wasn't for Sami Zayn and getting the bloodline over, I think Roman would actually, it would be like a 50-50, maybe 60-40. But just based on the last couple of weeks, how over Roman Reigns has become, like, he's getting cheered like 90% of it. And the other 10 is going to go to those people that just adore social media and adore what Logan Paul's been able to do. So Logan Paul, to me, Alino, call me crazy, by the end of the match, let's say he loses. I think he is losing, obviously, but I wouldn't be surprised after the match, this guy starts flipping people off, Logan Paul, and leaves Crown Jewel as a heel, because there's no way that this guy is a face. Just look at him. Like, his whole aura is not a face. So I think Roman Reigns is going to make this match actually very good. I'm actually very intrigued to see how Logan Paul does. He had a phenomenal SummerSlam match. I think this is going to be very good. And I've also heard rumors that Jake Paul might turn on his brother here. So I hope that doesn't happen. I hope they don't get that stuff involved. This isn't the Hardys in 2009. So I'm going to go with the bloodline. I'm going to go with Roman Reigns. And I think when he beats Logan Paul and pins him, he might get the biggest ovation out of all of the title defenses he's had.
I'm with you there. And got to still ask this because it is a big event. Austin Theory, is he going to be lurking?
I love it. He's going to be there, I think. Not cashing in, though. I think if he cashes in, that's going to make Roman Reigns a face, honestly. Like, let's say Roman Reigns wins. Logan Paul and Jake Paul are a little bit upset. They beat the shit out of Roman Reigns. And Theory cashes in. Then you're doing yourself a favor. Logan Paul will be one of the biggest heels. And by the way, ending one of the longest runs of a WWE champion that I can remember. Longer than CM Punk's, longer than Lesnar's. And you have a guy like Austin Theory hold the title. Roman Reigns would be one of the biggest baby faces. But then you're in a situation, Alina, where the rumor is Reigns and Rock at Mania. Who the hell's the face there and who's the heel? Because Roman's been over recently.
Yeah. I don't know, imagine A-Town down. It's going to be Saudi Arabia as an A, and Austin Theory comes out with a briefcase and wins it and loses it on Raw. Imagine that. Just comes in and is just cocky like an asshole, and he loses it. I think there's a way there that Roman could lose one title, or the Universal one is the one that was the longest one, so the WWE title should be the one that they take off him so they can have something for Raw, but I think they have something there. Like, Austin Theory, the clock is going to eventually run out. He's going to have like 7 months now until Money in the Bank or whenever he won it. So that could be interesting. Like, do you think he has to cash in, and even if it's on TV, and lose just to get it over with? Or is this even appealing for Raw just to have a guy like that hold the briefcase?
I think it's kind of like with Ziggler, man. Honestly, Ziggler at the time was very up and coming. He was in the main event. We saw him in 2011. He feuded with Edge early on in his career too. Austin Theory, to me, very similar situation. You know, he's very young. He's up and coming. He has the briefcase. I think he could hold it a little bit longer. I don't necessarily, I'm not sitting here and saying I want to see Theory lose and, you know, not be successful. I've said this to you before. I think it's too soon for him to hold a main event title. I don't see him winning it. I think eventually whoever he cashes into, I think he is losing. I don't know if it's going to be a squash. Maybe it'll be like a Sandow type thing where he cashes in and it's a hard fought match and he comes up short. I think that's the best option because, man, let's be honest. Are you going to have him win the title and be a Jack Swagger, like a champ for what, a month, 3 weeks? I don't think that's worth it in the long run for him. So I think this is going to be a hard lesson for Theory. I think whenever he loses, I think he's losing his Money in the Bank cash. And whenever he does, I think it's going to motivate him even more, man, in a couple years to be that guy. So he's been compared to Seth Rollins in terms of longevity and being that type of it factor. to me, I still don't think he wins it just based on the situation with Roman Reigns.
And I've got to touch on this. The Miz and Dexter Lumis, I don't think they're going to be there, but we found out more about this whole story why Dexter Lumis was kidnapping him. It's because The Miz saw he was on hard times there. He wanted to be like one of those celebrities that we hear about in the news that always have a stalker, and he hired Dexter Lumis to make it look real. And then after he transcribed the audio, he's like, "Do you understand?" And he just said, "Yeah, exactly." Silence. Like, do you think this is going to lead to a tag team and babyface turn for The Miz?
I'd like to see that. I think even if you have, I mean, Survivor Series is around the corner, which I think is perfect timing. You could have Judgment Day take on Gargano, Lumis, and Miz. I think that would be a really good six-man tag. The Miz is the type of guy where I think at this stage in his career, Alino, he can be very, very over as a face, whereas back in 2013 or 2012 when he turned face, it was just a disaster because he didn't necessarily know how to be a face. He was just coming off being one of the top heels in the company. So I think now with him being a veteran, a lot of people respecting his craft and how long he's been there. If he were to turn face with two up-and-coming guys, I mean, Gargano's been around for a long time, but with Lumis and Gargano not really having direction at that main event level yet, I think it's very intriguing, and I think they could get a huge win against Judgment Day at Survivor Series. If I'm creative, I'm booking that 100%.
And then they'll need another member there because Dominic is causing a ruckus over there. That little twerp is going after AJ, hitting frog splashes, acting like Eddie Guerrero. I think that's another matchup that they're doing, the OC and Judgment Day. This might sound crazy, but I think this is all set up for Dominic to get the win, and I think he's going to pin AJ. Do you think that's going to go over well?
I don't think you actually think that's going to happen? You think they're actually like going full on with Dominic? I don't. The thing is, I think they're going to go the opposite here. I think they're going to go with him costing them at like somehow. Like it's going to be Dominic's fault that they lose. And they're going to be like, "It's okay, you're inexperienced, whatever." But I think over time, it's going to catch up. I don't see Dominic pinning AJ Styles, man. I don't see that happening. And if it does, that is going to cause a ruckus. And maybe Triple H wants that because we saw with his promos, boy, oh boy, does he get booed.
Oh, and they're hilarious when he said, like, "I'm this generation's Eddie Guerrero." And then they're like, "Oh, yeah, but Eddie Guerrero is his generation's Dominic Mysterio." And you just see everybody eating it up. Like, I think they might have something here. Like, I know there's a lot of pressure on him, but the more he comes out and says dumb shit, I think everyone's just going to expect it. And they're just going to boo him because that's what you know. When Dominic comes on the screen, he doesn't look like the most intimidating guy in the group. And you don't expect him to be like a leader. And it looks like when he's cutting his promos, he always has a dig there on Ray. And I think that's hilarious. Like just the way he turned on him too and clotheslined him, low blowed Edge, and just left. I think he's going to be pushed to WrestleMania.
Oh my God. I love that. Hey, he went to SmackDown. So it's on the back burner for now. But I got to ask you this question before we go off. AJ Styles hinted that they have a Rhea problem. Who's going to be that woman that joins, you know, the OC? Is it going to be Charlotte Flair or is it going to be Beth Phoenix?
I think it would be interesting if it is Charlotte because she needs to do something else other than just be women's champion. Like she needs another role. She can be that attraction and just be the secondary feud that gets interest on the division. But I think they'll might lean towards Beth Phoenix because they kind of teased it and then they never followed up with it when Beth took or got taken out there by Rhea. So I think that could lead away for Beth Phoenix and Rhea, maybe at Royal Rumble.
Yeah, like I was saying to Collab because he said, you know, what was the point of that I Quit match long run, like in the long run? I think Beth Phoenix is not done yet. We saw that. I think she still has a little bit left in the tank. And I think that would be a great marquee matchup. It's like what we had at SummerSlam when you had Trish Stratus versus Charlotte Flair. It's not going to be on that level. But you have Rhea Ripley, who's a hulking woman, and you have Beth Phoenix, who's like the OG of this decade hulking woman. So it would be a marquee matchup. And I think Rhea winning clean, let's say they do have that one-on-one match, that would put Rhea in a whole other stratosphere moving forward, I think.
And where do you think, now they're on that topic, like, I know, like, long-term wise, like, I don't know what they were going to do with Edge and Finn Balor, but who do you think he should feud with on Raw that would actually make sense when he comes back?
I was going to say probably a guy. It's tough for Edge because he's always going to be like some main event. And on Raw right now, man, there's not a lot of guys. Like, would it be Elias? Like, are you going to turn Elias heel and have him face Edge? To me, that's kind of underwhelming. Seth Rollins is the United States champion. Are you going to have Edge go and feud with Rollins again? I don't think so. Also, dude, I think Rollins is hinting at a face turn. So there's just, to me, there's not enough heels. Call me crazy. On Raw, I don't see Edge. Is Edge maybe hinting going back to SmackDown? Because I have also heard that.
Yeah, that'd be good. Because Raw, like, he already worked, when you think about it, like, Seth Rollins, he worked with The Miz earlier in the year. He worked with Finn Balor. He's already worked kind of with AJ and those guys. But, like, there's no one really on that level that you can. He even worked with Dominic and Rey. So if he goes to SmackDown, like, what if Rey wins a title eventually and Edge comes out as a heel again and goes after Rey for the title?
I just think, for me, Alino, I'll end with this with Edge. I think, for me, a big swerve that I would really love, we were talking about Drew McIntyre before. Let's say Sheamus is over and he wins the Intercontinental title from Gunther eventually. You could maybe have Drew McIntyre turn heel, and you could have Drew face Edge and have Drew go over and start his destruction as a top heel, because I think that would be great for both guys. You know, you have another marquee matchup for Edge at WrestleMania or at the Royal Rumble, and you have Drew McIntyre get back on his feet and, you know, start getting wins together again. But again, with Roman Reigns and Karrion Kross being on SmackDown, it'd be tough, I think, for a guy like Drew McIntyre to turn heel. But again, how about Karrion Kross versus Edge? Not really sure, man.
I like it. And Bray Wyatt's going to be there. Uncle Howdy is being a bit of an asshole. He keeps on interrupting. And a lot of people are thinking that that could be Bo Dallas's new role. Do you think that we'll see more guys come out as the weeks go on, or do you think they're just going to keep with Uncle Howdy for now?
I think for now, Uncle Howdy is the way to go. I think it's basically, I remember when he came out, he did that genuine promo. It was basically him feuding with himself. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he has two different personalities. But if it is actually somebody different and it is Bo Dallas, that would just, I think, swerve everybody. And you actually have Bo Dallas feud with Bray Wyatt. I think that would skyrocket Bo Dallas's career. And I think that would benefit both guys because, again, they are family. And they would bring that personable stance in that feud. But at the end of the day, man, I think regardless, whatever this character and whoever Bray Wyatt's feuding with, everybody, including people out of Saudi Arabia, are going to be all over that because we saw his return. I don't remember a freaking pop as big as that in a long time.
Yeah, same here. That was just crazy, too. The way they even planned it out, the way they filmed it, the way they shot it and everything, it was a perfect return, and the crowd was going crazy for it. So I hope they don't go too long without, like, getting a feud from, because I think that might hurt his return in the long run. But right now I'm kind of liking this Uncle Howdy every week just interrupting the poor guy when he's trying to say some words to the fans and all this cryptic stuff, and you just see it, and I don't know, the hat, he's got barbed wire I think on it, he's got an earring. Uncle Howdy's got some issues, so hopefully you get that worked out. But that's been another fun episode here. We talked about Kessel being the Iron Man of the league, some NBA and NHL picks, and Crown Jewel, which takes place tomorrow afternoon. See you next week, guys.